May it please the Court, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely.
Mr. Teeves, before we start, remind me, who is the trial attorney in this case? The trial attorney?
Myself.
Okay, great.
Your Honor, and it was, as the Court is well aware, a young man facing many, many years in jail who thought that because the state's witness's credibility was not good, that he would waive it to the bench, which he did, and we had a trial in front of Judge Silverman. And the dynamic during trial, at one point, Judge Silverman interjected the possibility that on one of the robbery counts, the victim, that the charge could be wrong. Perhaps the Bridgers-Cricklow cases could have led to that charge being an aggravated menacing with a firearm based on the facts of that case. The defense did not really address Bridgers-Cricklow to the Court at that point. The state prosecutor did. In the same conversation, Judge Silverman mentioned, shouldn't I look at this as an attempted robbery instead? And I said yes, because I think, not that he could be necessarily convicted of that, but that was certainly a better analysis for the defense, because if we got convicted, if we argued Bridgers-Cricklow, we would have probably gotten convicted of a firearm and an ag menacing. But in that same discussion, the state prosecutor indicated that he was seeking a robbery conviction, that Bridgers-Cricklow did not apply, and he basically said, no, Your Honor, I want a robbery one. So I was aware of that, and I knew there's going to be a lot of convictions, and clearly the strategy.
Right. Let me ask it in terms of procedurally and the timing. Before closing arguments commenced, was everyone on notice what the possible outcomes were as to what the trial court was considering?
I would say no, Your Honor, because of the position the state took. My feeling at that time was that, you know, if they're not going to ask for a lesser included, and they're just going to go on the theory that was argued in closing that they're seeking a robbery one conviction, then I have an issue there.
Well, let me rephrase it so that we get to what I'm trying to find out. Did the trial judge, before closing arguments, advise everyone that he would be considering lesser included offenses to the offenses charged?
Yeah, I don't believe that's in the record, Your Honor. We did have this discussion about an attempted robbery, and certainly
is that off the record?
That we had the discussion is on the record, for sure, absolutely.
Well, when was this discussion about the attempted robbery? During closings, before closings?
Before closings, Your Honor. I think it was while the case was still going on.
Have you got a record cite for that?
I may, Your Honor, perhaps in rebuttal when I could review the record and have that. I do have the transcript in front of me. To the extent that the court is asking, you know, was it brought up? Was the defense aware of it? And the defense absolutely said, you know, yes, that would probably be a better way to look at it. I think so. There was a defense strategy.
But if we look at what the judge did, you know, part of what we're considering here is whether the party autonomy rule should apply in a bench trial.
Yes, sir.
But if the judge is saying, I'm considering I should perhaps look at this as attempted robbery, and the defense says that may be a better way to look at it, but the defense doesn't continue, however, you shouldn't look at it that way because we want all or nothing on robbery. And that's what you normally see when we're talking about the party autonomy rule. There's a question, the first question is there a rational basis in the evidence for a lesser included instruction?
Yes.
The second question is, does anybody want one? And what we've said under the party autonomy rule is, even if there is a rational basis in the evidence for a lesser included instruction, if both sides decide it's going to be all or nothing, they're entitled to make that decision. And we saw that in one of our more recent cases. So the question here is, we have to infer from the record either the attorneys were on notice that the judge was going to be looking at a lesser included offense, or they weren't on notice. And what do you think is a fair reading of the record?
That no lesser included offense request was made by the state, who would probably have the burden of coming forward with that. I never requested it. The record doesn't show that I requested it.
Well, that's the dilemma in a bench trial. You know, it's pretty easy in a jury trial because you're asking for an instruction. But in a bench trial, you have the situation where a judge hears the evidence and the judge knows the law. And the judge may conclude that the state didn't sustain its burden of proof on the charged offense, but that the defendant's guilty of a lesser included offense. In the absence of somebody saying something, should the judge be able to do that or not do that?
Well, the party autonomy rule, as it's been announced by this court, does not allow the judge to do that. Now, certainly the practice in our trial court is to discuss these types of issues openly, and the judge brings them up, and the lawyers must act accordingly. But, you know,
well, that would seem to be the way it should work, even possibly with a bench trial, where the judge said, all right, we're going to the evidence is all in, and you're about to make your closings. Do you want me to consider lesser included offenses or not? And then everybody would be on the record that, yes, we think you should include the following lesser included offenses, or we think you should consider no lesser included offenses. Then you go to closing. But what we have here is a situation that's ambiguous at best, don't we?
Ambiguous?
Ambiguous because of this discussion about attempted robbery.
Your Honor, I think the burden lies on the state to make the request. And in that sense, it's not ambiguous at all. In fact, the state prosecutor, you know, specifically rejected the opportunity to raise that. Now, and
so then your take on the record is the judge brought up the idea of attempted robbery, and you said that, well, that may be a good way to look at it. And the prosecutor said, no, this is first-degree robbery. So you're characterizing that exchange as an opportunity for a lesser-included offense that was declined by the prosecutor, and then you never joined in once it was – you never insisted once it was declined by the prosecutor.
That's right, Your Honor. And as the proceedings went on, it was never pursued again in the record. And
so there was no argument, closing argument. Your Honor, the court should convict, if at all, on the lesser included offense, not the offense charged, because, or you're on the other side, Your Honor, the court should not convict on the lesser included offense because. Was that argument made or not?
It, from the state, Your Honor, there was never an argument to a lesser included on that charge. From the defense, there was a statement that, you know, this could be an attempted robbery. And I wasn't arguing for the attempted robbery. I was saying, you know, again, it is somewhat vague. But what I was saying, and under the circumstances, was that, you know, the state has not charged this as attempted robbery. Here we are. I'm in my closing argument. I've heard nothing about an attempted robbery other than the brief discussion earlier. So I'm saying to the court, you know, Judge, this could be an attempted robbery, but it's not charged as an attempted robbery, and nobody has made a request for an attempted robbery.
Okay, so there was no argument by either side on whether or not, in fact, it was an attempted robbery.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's absolutely true. And, you know, again, the dynamic of the trial was the defense had little to work with. This issue was present. I think the defense had every right to handle it the way it did and not put the state on notice of a problem possibly with their case, and that's what we decided to do. That's what I decided to do. And
so your view was they couldn't present evidence to convict him as charged, and since they were only pursuing it as first-degree robbery, at least your understanding after the exchange with the judge, your best hope was that the judge would agree that they had that the state hadn't carried its burden on the charge defense.
Yes, Your Honor, that's my argument. And I think we read from the trial court that, you know, that charge was that request was not made. And but, you know, had this been a jury trial, there would have been a prayer conference. And if there was a prayer conference, the state would have had the opportunity to raise that. And if they did, I would have instructed a jury like that, as that. But that kind of ignores some of what the court is bringing up to me about, or what I'm also bringing up to the court, that it's the state's burden, I think, to at least make the request. And there's a benefit to, you know, if the court was to reach out in this case and back up that party autonomy rule, there's going to be a benefit to the whole defense bar and the state's prosecutors as well to know that the court's not going to try the case for them. We've got to step up on both sides and make the request. And recently I had
let's assume for argument that we adopt a rule that there can be, as urged by the state, that the trial court can sua sponte consider a lesser included offense. Now, what would be the appropriate procedure that gives everyone the fair opportunity to argue pro and con for that? Maryland just says an opportunity, which that sounds kind of vague. New Hampshire has an express rule that says prior to closing statements, the trial judge must say he intends to consider lesser included offenses so that everyone's on notice. And there's a parallel there to a jury trial where everyone knows going into closing arguments what the possible verdicts are going to be. What should our rule be if we say that sua sponte, the court can do this?
Argument on the issue, Your Honor. So at least one party can step up and say, you know, I agree that's appropriate, Your Honor, based on these facts, based on the law, if the court does adopt that Maryland rule. But
well, there are two parts to Justice Ridgely's question there. One is whether if we don't have the party autonomy rule in bench trials, then the judge is saying, I want you to know, here are the lesser included offenses I'm going to consider, and you should be prepared to argue them. And the other question is, should that be the rule, or if the judge says, unless there's an objection, I'm going to consider these lesser included offenses, and then at least have a discussion on the record of what everyone will be arguing to the judge at the close of the case. Do you think that the party autonomy rule should be extended to bench trials, and that the party should have a right to say to the judge, we've tried this as a first-degree robbery, and that's the only thing we want you to consider, all or nothing on first-degree robbery?
I think whatever's going to be better, obviously, Your Honor, for the process and the lawyers involved. I'm not asking the court to adopt the Maryland rule. I think the party autonomy rule would work out very well if it was kind of strictly enforced on bench trials as well. I think the lawyers need to, you know, everyone included, myself included, step up and realize it's our burden to take care of those things and not have the court, you know, kind of, although the court is always helpful to us in many different scenarios to both sides, not stepping in necessarily and making suggestions about what is appropriate. The lawyers have to try the cases right, and I just think that's the right thing to do.
Well, the Maryland court said that strategy is not really involved in a bench trial because the trial judge is presumed to know the law and has a duty to apply the law, and you don't have the same considerations. Is that a correct argument or an incorrect argument?
I don't like – I read that, Your Honor. I don't like that argument. I think there was a strategy employed in this case, you know, it was basically me seeing a problem and electing not to bring it up so it can be corrected. That happens all the time in our courts from the defense side. I don't agree that, you know, just because it's a bench trial, all strategy with regard to lesser included is not present, because, you know, the judge certainly is more learned in the law than many of our young lawyers. But no, I don't think it should be extended that way. I don't think the judge should extend it.
Will there be fewer or more bench trials with or without a party autonomy rule?
With the party autonomy rule, I think there, I don't really see it having a great impact, Your Honor. There may be slightly more, since the burden, you know, will be clear to everybody that it's their burden to take care of all of this, to get last for the lesser included. So it's a toss-up, because juries, you get incredible verdicts from the defense side. From juries, you get, you know, quick verdicts where you didn't have a shot. I would think I'm having trouble answering that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I would think there'd probably be slightly more, because the state is going to have a little bit of a hoop to jump through, as will the defense. And the if a defendant thinks a judge is more likely to make that decision in his favor, then.
Well, let me be more specific. In this case, if you'd known up front that there was a party autonomy rule or not, would that have affected the choice to waive the jury trial?
Not in this case, it would not, Your Honor. Okay. This young man had his mind made up. It was not a part of our discussion about it.
And do you want to save your remaining 3 minutes?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wallace.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The problem in the bench trial is this, and the Court's already discussed it with Mr. Tease, and that is the dynamics of a bench trial and the communications between the Court and the attorneys about what to consider as far as lessers is far greater. To answer Justice Ridgely's question, this never came up until closing. The motion for judgment of acquittal, there was discussion as to whether or not there was simply sufficient evidence, but never with the extension, if there isn't sufficient evidence of robbery, is there sufficient evidence for attempted robbery? That wasn't brought up by the judge or the parties. And that's why the dynamic in a bench trial is a little bit different, because during your closing arguments, as opposed to a juror raising his hand and saying, hey, what about this, a judge does. Both parties, and that's exactly what happened here. The trial judge said, well, to the prosecutor, Mr. Martiniak, if in fact it's not, couldn't I view this as an attempted robbery also? I don't think there's any question in anyone's mind, and there's certainly no argument that there was sufficient rational basis in the evidence for the attempted robbery. In fact, I think that Mr. Tease made that concession during closing. This is all about process, and do we extend the party autonomy rule to bench trials, or do we do what Maryland did and said, no, because you don't need those same benefits? I'm going to be honest.
But before we get into that important point, in this case, did the prosecutor say, no, it's not attempted robbery, it's robbery? Or did the prosecutor agree that that was a possibility?
It was never as fine a point as that. That was the problem. Unlike a jury instruction where you say, do you want me to consider it or you don't, do you want the fact finder to consider it or not? And instead, it was much more of a legal argument about, is there sufficient evidence of the robbery? And what the prosecutor said is, under Ross versus State, Judge, this is robbery, but never said, no, it's not attempted robbery, or no, I don't want you to even consider that. And that's something that...
Wasn't he saying that in the context of this whole discussion about the possibility of attempted robbery? Wasn't that his, when it was suggested that it might be attempted robbery, I thought the response was no, under Ross, this is robbery.
It wasn't, no, it's not attempted robbery, because attempted robbery is a lesser included offense of robbery. So it's not, no, the evidence doesn't add up to attempted robbery here. It's the evidence that we have here gets you all the way to robbery, Your Honor. And I'm not trying to put too fine of a point on it, but obviously whenever you argue all the evidence is there for robbery, you're also arguing all the evidence is there for any lesser offense, too. And because of where they were, Bridger had just been affirmed by this court. In fact, it was the same trial judge, and there was a question about how do you deal with employee situation. This was an employee standing right next to the register as opposed to Bridger's where it were employees elsewhere. That's why the trial judge said, well, isn't this really sufficient evidence for attempted robbery? So unlike that decision point where you have it in a bench in a jury trial, Rule 30 ensures that we have those discussions on instructions. There was never quite the, I'm rejecting the idea that you should even consider attempted robbery. It was the, no, judge, all the evidence is there for robbery, not, and I won't take attempted robbery, or we don't want attempted robbery.
Well, is it fair to say that the judge at least suggested the possibility that the court might consider the lesser included?
Yes.
Is it also fair to say that neither side affirmatively disabused him of that notion?
Yes. Neither side said, we reject that as a possible verdict here, Your Honor, or well, we accept did, that as did, a possible
did,
verdict.
Did the parties either expressly or in substance say, no, Judge, we do not want you to consider that. It's all or nothing. It's either robbery one or innocent.
No. My suggestion is neither party did that. Perhaps the state, because of the way it was arguing the law, obviously the defense argues that was really rejecting that as a possibility. I suggest it's not. But this defense also accepted at least the evidence added up to that. So there was never that fine point of we accept or reject this as a possible verdict.
So the judge could have taken from that interchange, that is from, you know, that colloquy, whatever it might be, that he was free to consider the lesser included.
I believe he could, and I believe he did, and in fact explained later, look, this is really a process question, because if we had been before a jury, we would have been sitting in my chambers talking about lessers, and everybody would have said yes or no.
But is it accurate that there was no argument that, as a matter of fact, there was a lesser-included offense in this case by either side?
Except that the judge brought up the issue first. The prosecutor said, no, it's better seen as a robbery. The defense said, well, Your Honor, sure, the evidence is there for attempted robbery, and in fact, that's probably the better view. So both sides.
Was that during the closing argument?
That was during the closing argument. That's at page 16, 17 of the appendix.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is, let's assume, I mean, the Maryland court has cited New Hampshire, and New Hampshire allows for the trial court to consider sua sponte in a non-jury trial a lesser-included offense, but should, quote, indicate to the parties at the close of the evidence its intention to raise a lesser-included offense and give both sides an opportunity to express their views on the subject. First, did that happen in this case, that indication at the close of the evidence? And second, is the New Hampshire rule a better rule than just this amorphous opportunity description by Maryland or not?
Your Honor's first question, no, that did not happen. It should have. I do believe that that is absolutely the better rule. That basically what we should have at the end close of evidence of bench trial is a prayer conference, for lack of a better term, what we have under Criminal Rule 30.
Well, as you know, Mr. Wallace, in prior cases, you've been a proponent of the party autonomy rule, and our court has adopted that in jury trials. But now, the real question is, should we abandon the party autonomy rule for bench trials? Because under the party autonomy rule with a jury trial, if the parties don't want lesser included offenses, the judge can't say, I'm giving them anyway. But here, if the judge gives notice to the parties at a bench trial, I'm considering lesser included offenses, the real question becomes, should the party autonomy rule apply where the parties can say, no, thank you? Or should the judge be able to say at a bench trial, I'm considering them anyway, even though at a jury trial he couldn't give the instructions anyway? Why should we have that hybrid approach? Why doesn't it simply make sense to have party autonomy at both?
Your Honor, I reread the cases last night. I rethought about that. I thought about it even while I was writing the brief. I have to say that I'm not as convinced by the Maryland Court of Appeals' view on why the difference. I don't know that it's that it does, in fact, that it's terribly persuasive that there are those strategic choices. And I think that even in a bench trial, both sides would make strategic choices as to what the court may or what they may wish the court to consider. I think the better, stronger view is to have a pure party autonomy rule through bench trials also. But you have to have that process first, that we should do what New Hampshire does, that we should do what we would hope we would do in this court with jury instructions.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the purpose of my question. I think everyone should agree that they should know going into closing what are the possible verdicts. But the question is, when we introduce the party autonomy rule, once you've had this discussion and the process is functioning, should the parties be able to say no thank you, or should the judge be able to override party autonomy at a bench trial?
I don't know that there's really any good principled reason to allow the trial judge to override it in the bench situation. Again, I've read the Maryland Court of Appeals decision, and it has some persuasive authority, mainly because when we adopted the party autonomy rule and the basis behind it, we adopted, and we've cited many times in this in Delaware, the Higgins case by the Maryland Court of Appeals. And then when they just decided Smith last year and cite Higgins itself and say, but it doesn't apply to bench trials, I believe that their analysis does fall short when we get to the why. Why would you make that distinction? We haven't made that decision in this jurisdiction yet. I am a strong proponent of the party autonomy rule. I think there are many benefits to both sides, one of which is that the defendant gets the full benefit of the reasonable doubt burden.
When you say you are a strong proponent, you mean the state?
Yes.
In this case,
I've argued so many times.
Yeah, putting that aside, then the real question is, if we're looking at a process in the abstract in this case, and were the parties on fair notice that attempted robbery was a possibility?
The question is when, in the ideal, no.
It wasn't done crisply.
No.
And we frequently see things that are not done crisply, and that's why we have doctrines like substantial compliance, harmless error, and other things. So that's my question. In the overall scheme of things, do you think these lawyers were going into closing thinking this is robbery or nothing? Or do you think that they realized attempted robbery was a possible verdict?
I'll let Mr. T speak for himself, although I don't know that the record makes it very clear one way or the other. I don't believe either really thought about it.
And you that, think there that may have been no meeting of the minds as far as the lawyers were concerned? That is, the two trial lawyers may have had different views, but you are clear that the judge was left with the impression that he could make up that he could find guilt on a lesser included.
Yes. I don't believe that either trial attorney went in saying, I know that this is all or nothing as I argue before I start my argument, and never really put as much thought into it as we do in a jury trial. And then when the judge started to introduce that ideal, neither one also either said, I'm drawing the line in the sand here to say, no, judge, I don't want that. And so the judge was left with the impression that I can consider this and should. I don't believe that should happen. It's not crisp, and I don't believe it should happen, that this discussion should be had up front, and that I believe the better view is that if we had strict party autonomy going through bench trials, everyone is left in a better situation. As to Justice Ridgely's question as to whether or not that's going to bring about more bench trials or not, not sure. Certainly can't hurt, because people know what they're facing at that time. They know that they have that same benefit that they would in a jury trial of saying, no, I can go all or nothing with the judge, or I can look and seek lesser included and maybe make legal arguments under 206 that I probably can't make in front of a jury. It's very difficult in front of a jury to say, I didn't do it, but if I did do it, it's really only a lesser. That goes much further with a judge, and I have been involved in bench trials because they want to forward that argument. In reality, under 206, and we keep talking about lesser included, in reality, attempt in this circumstance isn't even a lesser included. It's called an included offense, but it's the same grade and degree because of the way our attempt statute works. So that's why I think, in part, the parties didn't think as much about it as you would, is this attempted robbery or simply, for instance, theft because they haven't proved the force element, or is it aggravated menacing because they haven't proven, for instance, the clerk's tie to the theft element of this. That's why I believe that probably wasn't as much of that discussion as a legal point between Ross and 206 as to which of these animals is it in this particular case. Is it attempt robbery or robbery itself, both of which are the same grade and degree of offense?
Mr. Wallace, I'd like to sort of take a higher altitude approach in this respect. I understand the symmetry and the party autonomy rule in one case and the difficulty with the Maryland court's rationale that there's no strategy in a bench trial, but there obviously is strategy in a bench trial. What about the interests of justice approach in the sense that if a trial judge has a situation where there's a prosecutor who's overzealous, reaching too far, and the defense sees that, sees the opportunity for no criminal liability when there is a crime, and the evidence shows there's a crime, and this rule effectively ties the hands of a judge to do, literally, to do justice. Now, why is that a good approach?
I believe that the reason it may be a good approach, one, is that it does allow a certain level of at least predictability throughout the system between jury and non-jury trials. I certainly understand the court's concern. I share that concern, and the state shares that concern. The difference is this. Why would we treat someone differently because they decided to go to a judge as opposed to selecting a jury? Is there any real principled reason to do that? And I believe that if, in fact, we were to go forward with giving strong instructions to judges, both in jury trials and non-jury trials, to have prayer conferences in which, even if the judge brings up the suggestion originally, do we have lessers here at counsel? You know, is attempt something that we should be considering?
Hasn't our court addressed this in part, consistent with what you're saying, when we decided under the party autonomy rule, the judge can't override the party's decision because the jury's left with the same dilemma the judge has. The jury might hear the evidence and say, I think this person did something, and it's a crime. But the state hasn't proved the charge offense, and we've only given one choice, so we have to find him not guilty as charged.
Yes, and that's the dilemma, and the dilemma remains the same. I guess my only point is, and I'm not saying that the judge should be able to override, and he shouldn't, or she shouldn't, but at very least, there is nothing in the party autonomy rule that prohibits the judge from suggesting it. I think that that all parties in the prayer conference can be active in suggesting and discussing what are the lesser includeds. But once the decision point comes, it is up to the parties.
Well, and that's the way it works. This isn't like the parties stipulate. In a jury trial, the judge says, are there any requests for lesser included offenses? And if the state wants a lesser included offense, no matter how much the defendant objects, if there's evidence to support the lesser included offense, the state will get it, and vice versa.
Right.
So it all turns down to the judge suggesting maybe someone didn't prove the charged offense. Does anyone want lessers? And then the state could see its evidence was short and ask for a lesser included offense, or the defendant can ask for a lesser included offense. But the parties don't stipulate and impose something on the judge. They have to make their case that the lesser is supported by the evidence.
Yes. And when the parties do so, and the judge does become an active participant, at very least, in discussing the law and the possible applicable lessers, I think if we have adopted that as good enough for the jury situation, then we should also with the bench situation. And I can certainly understand the frustration of a trial judge who thinks that either side is making a bad decision. But does the dynamic truly change, or should we give either group of defendants greater or lesser protection from, I guess, their attorneys in that circumstance, or their own decision, because it really does come down to the party's decision as to what they wish to exercise there.
And there's always Rule 61, I suppose.
Unfortunately, yes, there is. if there's no further questions from the court, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Mr. Tease, I have one question. Let's assume that the trial judge had said, not only is there a possibility that I could consider attempted robbery, but I'm going to consider it, and you should be prepared to argue it. Would there have been, from the defense's side, an argument that there was no basis to find attempted robbery here?
Yes, Your Honor, but I would have based it at that moment on the fact that the state had not come forward with the request. And that's what I was thinking throughout the whole issue. I mean, it wasn't – I know it was not
that
a,
you were – in other words, you would be arguing surprise that – the state never raised it, and
not surprise, Your Honor, but it's just their burden to do so, and I knew that prosecutor was not going to do it.
The prosecutor's argument, if I understood Mr. Wallace's position correctly, is that, look, we have enough for robbery, therefore, perforce, there's enough for attempted robbery. That's their position. The judge would then ask, Mr. Tease, what's your response?
Well,
what I'm really driving at is, would had you known that this possibility was on the table and were given the opportunity to make whatever argument you wanted to make,
I see.
Would the result have been any different than what happened here?
I hope this answers the question, Your Honor. My only response to a judge asking me to address it would be that, there's not a basis for a robbery one. There's a basis for an attempted robbery. We didn't get there. If it got there, I also would have brought up the fact that I'm not requesting it, Your Honor. The state hasn't requested it. I see I have 50 seconds, Your Honor. It was during closing arguments, at least in closing arguments, when Judge Silverman asked the state about the attempted robbery, and I think the record shows that the state said no. There's not a basis for that, Your Honor. But I know the court has heard that, so thank you. If there's any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The court will take this matter under advisement and will adjourn for the day.